If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift is proudly supported by Murdoch's University School of Arts. Turn your notifications off, kids. If you're interested in making something, a degree from Murdoch University School of Arts might be just the ticket. It's designed in consultation with industry and business. And the Bachelor of Creative Media allows you to specialize in a number of fields, including sound, graphic design, or even games. And you can combine bits and pieces to make a super ultra deluxe Street Fighter 2 mega degree. You can use these cross-disciplinary skills to make something cool and get the skills you need to be ready for the workforce. Search Murdoch University and head to the website for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly sponsoring Pixel Sift. Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. My name is Gianni, and joining me today are my co-hosts Mitch and Sarah, who's joining us for the last time in this state before, just like everyone else in Western Australia, they eventually go to Melbourne. Sarah, thanks for joining us. Mitch, you're all right.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks awesome. For letting me on one last time.
You're welcome. Now, our guest today is a technical director from that great state that you're visiting, Matt Clark. He's from the Voxel Agents. Thanks for joining us today, Matt. We're really interested to hear more about your new game or upcoming game, The Gardens Between.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We'll be learning all about that a little bit later in the show. But first, Mitch, there's been something that's dominating the news cycle. What are we talking about?
Well, our news cycle anyway. So yes, the Australian government has finally gotten back to us about that Senate inquiry way back in 2016. So yeah, and it doesn't look great for the Australian development community.
It doesn't look great. That's definitely true. Let's jump in, shall we?
Visit us on pixelsift.com.au.
So if you're not in the loop about the Australian games and Australian politics, the federal government has, I guess, gotten back to us about a Senate inquiry that was submitted almost a year and a half ago, or 2 years, as we were discussing. It's almost 2 years at this point, 642 days.
That's right.
Yep. And there were a couple of conditions that were put forward, and they were almost all knocked back, and some of them were, what's the other term for that? I guess, like, just, okay with it.
They were noted.
Mitch. They were noted, sorry.
So we'll take you right back to the beginning. So the Senate has a committee that looks at communications and a bunch of other things. It's a cross-party committee, so there's people from the Liberal Party, the Labor Party, the Greens. Scott Ludlam was a proponent of this particular committee and was on there pushing for the Australian games industry. They delivered a report after doing 111 submissions basically to this inquiry, and they delivered a report with some recommendations about what they think the Australian games industry needs in order to get that shot in the arm to push it into the next gear. So they do this for lots of different types of things. They'll do it for like defence and coal and all of that other bits and pieces, but they do it for a number of different industries, and these committees are designed to kind of like do a bit of fact finding so that the government can make a good decision about the plans that they're going to make. So are required by law to provide a response 3 months after the Senate committee has tabled their recommendations, and it took 642 days. So I'm not a maths wizard, but I think that's a little bit longer than 3 months.
I'm sure they just misread it.
They must have just, they probably sent.
She'll be right, mate. It's just a simple little error.
They asked for an extension on it, and they sent in a note, and they've got a doctor's certificate. So,
at what point do you think they went, oh shit, we better put something out, otherwise it might get ridiculous at this point?
I don't think they ever thought it was ridiculous at any point. Yeah. Anyway,
I bet they thought it was ridiculous. ridiculous. The second it landed on someone's desk, I took one look at the title and laughed at it, frankly, is by judging by the response we got.
So out of the 8 recommendations that were made by the Senate committee, the government noted 5 of them, which means basically they just go, we understand that that's a recommendation and thank you for providing that recommendation.
And they put it in the paper shredder.
Yeah, they just basically said, we've noted that. They did not support 2 of the recommendations that were in there. And while it did support 1 of the recommendations, which was the encouraging the uptake of serious games through, you know, consultation with industry and all that sort of stuff, it believed that the industry should sort of pursue this instead of the government.
This economy.
Yeah, I know. no other initiatives were supported, though the GDAA received $17,000 from the communications department to provide a showcase of Australian content at the Game Developers Conference, which is coming up soon. So, Matt, that's a background on everything here. What do you feel about this particular revelation that came out yesterday, and was this what you were expecting?
Yeah, I don't think anyone in the industry was particularly surprised by it. I mean, this is the government that cut the Screen Australia funding originally anyway. Surprising that it took 200 days to get back to us. But yeah, I don't think it was unexpected at all.
And have you seen some of the conversations that people have been having and the idea that, or how has people kind of been responding to it out of people that you have spoken to?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are pretty annoyed. I definitely think it's pretty short-sighted. They don't really, like, we will keep making games. We're going to keep making games. But if you want to look at, you know, getting big investment and starting, you know, we want to get, like, a Supercell-level company in Australia, we need government support to reach those kind of levels.
Now, you originally received a bit of support from Screen Australia, and can you tell me a little bit about how that kind of happened and the sort of difference that made to the Voxel agents?
Yes, yeah, so there was a Screen Australia fund that was set up in like 2013, 2012, and the way that worked was they were actually investing in companies, so a company that would have a slate of products. It was largely focused around like hiring people and growing studios, bringing more people in. But it really gave us the ability to, I guess, take a few more risks and survive maybe a game that didn't work very well. So I guess because we're a small company, we really like live and die on our successes. So if we make a game, it comes out, it makes some money that funds our next game. But then if the next game doesn't work, then we can't fund the one after that. Because we just make all of our own original IP. Mm-hmm. So this gave us like really the ability to, you know, take a risk, make a game that ended up not working. But then after that, because we had the funding, we could go on to make Train Conductor World, which has made about $1 million. We've got, I don't know, 8 million players on that, which is pretty amazing. And The Gardens Between, which is now up for an IGF nominated award and will be coming out later this year.
How much of you're also in a state, Victoria, which does have state government support. How much of a difference does that make? And would it be something enough that would, if you didn't live in Victoria, would it draw you to the state to go there?
I assume it does draw some people to the state. I think moving is a pretty big, tough call. I mean, we moved to Melbourne because we love Melbourne, not for the funding. The funding is just like a nice bonus. And you have to earn it as well. Like you need to have the right game and the right product that makes sense for Film Victoria to invest in it, because they want to get their money back at the end of the day as well.
So, what do you think is the next step? I guess I mean I've seen a lot of conversations, and I think one of the best takes was John Kane, developer of Mallow Drops and Killing Time at Lightspeed, had this take. He says, "Yo, who knows how to dig up coal and turn it into a gun? Because that's literally the only industry this government will support at this point."
yeah, game about that.
The timing of that just really, really, you know, gets my goat. It annoys me so much. Like the game industry is a, you know, we make 90-95% of our money from exports. Like if they want to invest in an industry that's going to bring in global dollars into Australia that we spend in Australia, like killing people with guns is just stupid and short-sighted. Like it's not going to work.
I know the IGEA and GDAA have been sort of pushing for this and have been working hard to make something happen. And I think it is it is a credit that they have got that $17,000 to show off our export product, which is Australian games at GDC. Do you think this is just kind of a step along the way and people will keep ticking along, or do you think a lot of people will be like, no, nah, I'm, you know, this is the final straw that's broken the camel's back?
Like, I think most of the game companies in Australia will keep making games. You've got the few that have got the formula down pat, like Wicked Witch, Defiant Development, like those guys know what they're doing. They're making great games. They got thriving businesses. But then a lot of the small indies, they're just going to keep making games because that's what they love doing. I think the missing out on the funding really is missing out on like bringing in new investment and outside investment to like multiply those dollars and grow large studios that will make like a big, big difference. So I think that's the main thing that we're missing.
You mentioned
is that, your question?
Yeah, Screenist. Well, I guess that's it. That you know, you don't get any new players into the game effectively, yeah, if people have to just do it all on their own dime. You mentioned that Screen Australia sort of invested into your company. Have they had a return on what they on their investment, or was it given as a grant?
So it was 25% grant, 75% loan of the money that they gave us, and we're due to pay back the first installment pretty soon. Which I think we'll be able to do.
Which is good, obviously, because it's, you know, you're coming back and paying that back means that the cost itself isn't actually, you know, as big as the as burden as what people could see. So other than
government organizations, is there anywhere else that developers can turn to for funding?
There's some successful developers in Australia, for example, Hipster Whale, have funded companies, so they went to support pretty great studios, I think, and they're publishing a few other games. But really, there's not a lot of venture capitalist money in Australia. I think we have some like interesting investment laws that stop people from raising money from friends and family and things like that. I think if people are looking for investment, like they basically have to go to Silicon Valley because that's where the money for that sort of thing is, basically.
So what you're saying is basically the government tells, you know, you guys, the game developers of Australia, that it's up to you to kind of sort out, you know, relative funding, you know, within the industry. And now you're saying, well, that's absolutely not viable in the long run for the amount of people or, you know, it's only viable for a small percentage. Is that right?
Yeah, basically.
Yikes.
It's just making games is really hard.
I think what really is going to be really interesting to see is how this kind of shakes out in terms of further developments. I think like a lot of state governments are now starting to move in this direction. Screen Queensland, which previously did not have any funding for games, have now just recently announced that they are offering a couple of different funding packages and had previously sort of tested the water with offering travel grants, which allowed developers to travel from their home state to a convention. I think they had travel grants for GCAP, and I'm not sure if they had GDC, but quite often they do have that sort of funding available, and then did Kim Alom, who works at Defiant Development, got some funding to support her work in that industry. I think we'll start to see a little bit more of this kind of develop as the states kind of go along. I think it is extremely disappointing that it has taken as long as it's taken to have,
just to get an opinion out of them, essentially.
And to have this sort of recommendations. Who, you know, it took a lot of consultation. Well, 111 submissions, which that's time and effort for people who put that information in, who want to see this industry sort of develop.
But what seemed to be a little bit more disappointing was just the game development community. They just weren't surprised at all. It's like, I was just looking at the tweets. They were just like, yeah, it sucks, but we expected it. I was just like, that's rough.
Yeah,
I mean, I had some optimism when the article went past my screen. I was like, oh, maybe we'll have some, I don't know, we'll make some progress. Yeah. But I mean, this has got the conversation going, and at least we know they haven't entirely forgotten about it, I guess.
Interestingly, Damsel, made by Screwtape Studios, is now throwing up a little screen at the when you load up the game saying, hey, we've got this information, and if it's important to you and you're in Australia, you should contact your representative. fellow Queensland developers who made the game Satellite Rain have a little icon at the back of their credits, which says made in Australia despite the best efforts of our government, which has been in for a while. Satellite Rain's been out for a while. And I think we'll start to see more of that sort of stuff as we go along. And
I saw Hien Pham, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. He's currently doing It Will Be Hard, a visual novel with, I think, with help from
John Kane.
Yep. Well, yeah. And he immediately tweeted something about how he was going to try and incorporate some of the recent political happenings into the story at some point, or to incorporate it into the game somehow as like a bit of like a, hey, so this is what's happening, you know, in our country. But yet, you know, he's still going to get his game out. I think it's really cool to see all these developers, you know, going, right, well, we're going to, you know, let people know what's going on.
Mm.
So when our games do ship, other people internationally will know that
we'll be aware.
You know, it's not good here and we're trying to make a difference. So that's really cool.
Mm. Hien, who had a crowdfunding campaign, actually got some funding from the City of Perth. Got a little bit of money there.
Yeah, go so Perth.
There you go. Look, we could talk about this for, I think, ever until the next revelation comes out.
It's slowly morphing into just complaining.
Yeah. No, I think it's justifiable.
And yeah,
A lot of other industries who have had similar reactions where...
I'm talking about us three in this room right now. It's slowly morphing into complaining.
it's a developing story, obviously, as we'll see how we go. But, you know, it's a good platform to go from. If you're not in government and you want to campaign on something else, that's something to go for. A bit of a politics tip for you there. So
just make sure you're not a dual citizen.
If you're listening, Bill, that's a good one to go for. Right now, though, let's jump into our next topic and learn a little bit more about the Gardens Between. Mitch, what's Discord?
Discord is an online chat service that most gamers use. Incidentally, you can also use it to talk to us at pixelsiv.com.au/Discord.
Yeah, you can talk about episodes, you can talk about upcoming topics, you can probably even coerce Mitch into playing a game with you online.
That's not going to happen.
That is going to happen. You're doing it. I'm saying that's happening. Sorry.
Yeah, well...
Join Discord.
You should grow your beard back.
pixelsiv.com.au/Discord.
I thought we got rid of that promo.
No, it's gold. It's utter gold.
Can I play a game with you later?
Yeah, sure.
You know, Matt's on Discord now. You can play a game.
Matt, did you get Discord for this show?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You made a good decision.
There we go. Thank you, Discord. You can send the checks to 1pixelsift. If you're just joining us,
at pixelsift.com.
Hello at pixelsift. That's our PayPal account. Send it through. If you're just joining us, we have Matt Clark. He's one of the creators and is the technical director at Voxel, the Voxel Agents, and they're working on a game called The Gardens Between. Now, if people weren't able to get down to PAX, which you were selected for the PAX Indie Showcase, can you tell us a little bit about what the game's about?
Yeah, sure. So it's like a surreal puzzle adventure game. It follows the story of two best friends. The trick in the game, though, is you're not actually controlling the characters at all. So you just control time. So you move time backwards and forwards to solve puzzles. That's a pretty like interesting narrative adventure puzzle game.
And we spoke to Henrik a little bit on the floor at PAX, and he was telling us you've been working on this game for a little while now. How did the game kind of come about, and what was sort of the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, so years ago, 2011, I think, we were prototyping a bunch of different ideas, a bunch of different games. And one of the ideas, we wanted to make the scene Minority Report, where Tom Cruise is like, rewinding and like scrubbing backwards and forwards through the precog's memories to try and find clues. So we actually made like a bunch of different prototypes of messing around with time or working on the idea of, I guess in Minority Report, they have like one of them is an unreliable narrator. Like they all have like slight differences. So if you had like three stories and you were scrubbing in time, you'd have to find out the real one. I don't know. We made like 20 different prototypes, all sorts of crazy different ideas. And one of them was, eventually became The Gardens Between. It was like a following the story of some characters, moving time backwards and forwards, changing state of the world to solve puzzles. We just thought that was a pretty cool idea. Sat on it for a few years while we worked on some other games, and then eventually decided that that was a game that we wanted to make. Basically because of the Screen Australia funding, actually.
There you go, paying dividends.
And that's what we call a callback.
Nice one. Now, if people haven't seen the game, it's got this really sort of lovely, sort of almost painted style, but it has a lot of sort of nostalgic references in it. How did you kind of build out that world, or what did your team do to make that world, and what were you kind of drawing on?
So we wanted to tell a story about friendship, basically. there's not like a lot of games that can tell like a platonic story of friendship, I think, or have done that previously that we could think of. And I guess when we think about friendships, friendships never seemed so large as when you were a child. So like childhood friendships seem to be like, that's a really good time to set that story in. And then because we all grew up in the 80s and 90s, that's where all the like nostalgic references come from. So yeah, so it's all like gardens that are built around, you know, huge Mac 2s and Famicoms and all sorts of crazy things, CRT televisions.
Wheelie bins.
Yeah, wheelie bins, the very Australian recycling one, yeah.
Now, the game itself has got this, you know, very sort of chilled out soundtrack, and you're working with Tim Scheel to make that. How did that sort of come about, and what sort of vibe were you going for when you were trying to build the soundtrack for this game?
Yeah, pretty relaxed was kind of definitely something we wanted to go for. A big core pillar of the game is we wanted to make a game that like anyone can play. All the story in the game is told without any like narrative or dialogue. It's all just through images. There's no time pressure to solve puzzles. It doesn't require dexterity. And I think like a relaxed soundscape kind of fits that mood. I think it's good to have, especially with puzzle games, kind of encourages contemplation. Which also fits in with the memories theme as well. You know, you're moving time backwards and forwards to contemplate different parts. So, yeah, like a pretty relaxing soundtrack, I think, fit that quite nicely.
The way your characters move along the level is very interesting to me because they kind of spiral up this hill and the level doesn't really go like in a traditional like left to right or right to left or straight forward and back. They kind of spiral upward. Where did that idea come from? Because I've seen that in very few games.
Yeah, I guess the main thing we wanted to make was like small, enclosed, intimate spaces, just focused around like a few central objects. And the only way to really do that is to make, you know, just put it on an island. So kind of the spinning around islands just kind of came naturally out of that. I guess the other thing is when you're controlling time, it's not always obvious what's like what you're in control of. So we really wanted to have like the camera motion kind of match that. So when the camera's moving to the right, time's moving forwards, and when it's moving to the left, it's moving backwards. So yeah, we just ended up with this like interesting spiraling levels. We've got like, I don't know, a ton of different types of ways of making a spiral on an island now. I think we've tried all of them.
Now, you mentioned that you made the previous game, Train Conductor World, and it's been quite successful for you. You're now sort of moving towards the PlayStation 4 for release of The Gardens Between. What was the sort of transition like when you were designing a sort of a puzzle game for a mobile platform with Train Conductor World versus making a puzzle game for a console?
Weirdly, like, I mean, we don't, when we started making the game, we didn't have a particular platform in mind. We kind of just, the way we work is we kind of come up with a core mechanic, try and find out what's interesting about that mechanic. And in this game, it was like discovering stories. So we worked with a writer, and just kind of, it kind of grew and evolved as we were making it, into this product. And when it got to a certain point, we were like, this only really makes sense on Steam or like consoles, because that's where people who are interested in like artistic types of games will play games. Like the mobile audience is very casual focused, like, you know, Candy Crush, Clash of Clans kind of deal, which is definitely not what this game is. Like you kind of want to like sit down and immerse yourself in it. So yeah, I guess after we made the decision to put it on Steam, then like, you know, big console screens is just just makes sense. Like that's how I prefer to play games. So yeah, it was kind of more of an evolution of just the best place for the game rather than like, let's make a console game.
Now, so we've actually talked to quite a few people that have put their games onto the PS4 and other consoles, and they've all had different stories about how that got started. Like, how did that get started for you?
Well, I guess, I mean, it's pretty easy just to plug a controller into the computer, and the game just feels the most natural with an analog stick. So we're doing that anyway, like we play it with a controller, so it just made sense. And then just traveling overseas, so at events like GDC and PAX, you run into other developers and other platform holders. So you talk to Sony and then you talk to them and then talk to them enough times and they sign you up to their platform. Luckily, Sony really loved the game. So it just worked out really nicely for us, I guess.
Wasn't a hard sell or anything like that?
Yeah, I think like going to shows like PAX does a really good job of that. Like, I think it's quite hard to walk up to someone and be like, hey, I've got a game and I want you to put it on all of your consoles. That's really hard to do. But when you can set up a show at PAX and people can walk by and just see lots of people playing the game and see how pretty it is. I think particularly with the Gardens Between, like, it's the art style that draws most people in. That just really helps because, like, if someone from Sony walks by and you've got a big line at your booth and everyone wants to play the game, then, you know, they also want that game.
Now, you said you've been working on it for a number of years, and when we spoke to Henrik at PAX late last year, he said you were very sort of close to that launch point. When can people sort of expect to being able to play The Gardens Between, and how does it feel to be at this point?
Yeah, it's good. It's taken a long time to get to this point. But yeah, we'd have the end in sight. It'll definitely be out this year. I don't want to give away too specific of a date, but 100% it will be out in 2018.
Yeah, don't give yourself a deadline, otherwise you might overshoot it by a year and a half.
642 days or anything like that.
Yeah. definitely in the next 30 days. We're going by government days.
There we go.
Government days.
Yeah. Now, if people want to find out a bit more about the game, and you can, one of the things I would recommend is check out the sort of the ambient trailers that you have on your website. But where They're should they really go good. To if they want to find out some more info?
Thegardensbetween.com is just that's where all the stuff is. We've got a trailer up there that's pretty interesting. Check that out; that's pretty cool. You just mentioned the ambient weird slow trailer thing that we tried to do. I don't know about you guys, but I love Netflix slow TV, like The Fireplace for Your Home,
yeah.
The Train Ride, The Garn on SBS, like that was amazing. So we kind of tried to do like a weird game version of that. So we've got like a weird 45-minute YouTube playlist of like game visuals and music. So you can find that on relax.thegardensbetween.com.
It is really, really cool to kind of have that. And I think, you know, YouTube is this platform that people use to listen to music primarily, and you can kind of just have it on in the background and just chill out. So if you have 45 minutes, then jump in there and check that one out. Look, we've got very excited to play it. It was one of, I guess, highlights at PAX Australia this year. Well, last year, actually, sorry. We're in 2018 now.
What are you, the government?
I know. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we're very excited to play it, and we'll be definitely putting links up to that on our website where you can find out more information about that, including links to everything that we've talked about on the show.
Yeah, you can expect to see that in 30 government days.
30 government days, yes. The website is pixelsift.com.au. We've also got a whole bunch of other stuff, haven't we, Mitch?
Yes, we do. Yes, we have a website that you just mentioned, and we also have the podcast available on iTunes, Google Play, Pocket Casts, and all your favorite podcast players.
That's right. And you can find out all about when we're going live. You can perhaps even join us on Discord and play some games with Matt and Mitch online. And that's Pixel
City. Me too now.
I will absolutely play a game with someone. As you know.
You've already got your first person who's going to play a game with you.
Yeah.
So there we go. We'll set that up. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord. We do this every fortnight, this podcast episode at least. And
we
on
do.
Alternating weeks, we do Let's Plays. Coming up, you can look forward to us designing a mode for Giant Margarita's Party Crashes.
Oh, we're doing that?
Coming up very soon. Follow those social medias to find out more information about that.
Yeah, Mitch, you should have followed our social media to find out more information about that.
I follow all the social medias.
Big thank you to Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting the show. We couldn't do it without you. We will be back next
on the
15th.
Week. Oh, wait. Well, next week with Let's Play 15th for the actual show.
That's right. Sarah, have a good time in Melbourne.
Thank you. I will.
Math.
Your hair looks like it's ready to go to Melbourne.
Definitely.
Matt, thank you very much for joining us. We're really excited to play your game and can't wait to check it out.
Guys, no, thank you for having me. It's been great.
We should get Discord to give us some
sweet bucks.
Does Discord have any money?
They have money.
They don't have money. I'm not convinced they have money.
See you next week, guys.
They have Bitcoin, surely.
See you guys. Bye.
Hey,
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.